We hear sometimes people saying, oh, Master taught Kriya this way, somebody else taught it that way, which is right? Some people say, oh, he diluted it, and so on. Actually, Kriya is basically one thing. You read when Master talked about Jesus or St. Paul or one or another master, he said they had Kriya or something very like it. In other words, the mechanics of it are really the purpose of it is not the mechanics. And so what Master taught, of course, Master being a master had a perfect right to make changes as he felt the occasion, the people, and so on demanded. But essentially what Kriya is based on the simple reality of the way our body is made. We have a nervous system, we're vertebrates. And when the life comes into the body, it begins with the union of the sperm and ovum at the medulla. The medulla is the central point from which the energy comes out, goes into the brain, goes down the spine, out into the nervous system. When you die, you withdraw that energy automatically and either go out through the spiritual eye, if you're enlightened, or sink back into sleep to leave your body. Now this, this is a universal fact, and you cannot say that your religion or this way or that way teaches differently without having to add, but they're wrong. Because this is simply the way we're made. Has nothing to do with belief, has nothing to do with isms, it's simply a fact. Now it's very interesting to see how very much we are based on the way everything is made. Master said that the spiritual eye, the star in the center of the spiritual eye, is the same as the body. The body is made in the image of God, literally in this sense, two legs, two arms, a head. This goes all the way across the board in many, many different contexts. One is that when God created the universe, he created duality. He had to. There was no other way he could do it. He didn't have stone out of which to carve us or something. He had to produce it out of his own mind. This thought is not so easy to understand until we take into account the discoveries of modern science, which show us that the body and that matter is really only vibrating energy. That matter doesn't exist except as energy. Energy, the yogis say, and a number of physicists suspect, is really only thoughts. And those thoughts are all part of the consciousness of God. It's interesting how nobody ever really goes into consciousness to talk about it because you can't really talk about it in a scientific way. You can see a chemical. You cannot see consciousness because it's with consciousness that you do the seeing. Therefore, Descartes said, I think, therefore I am. But the truth is that the less you think, possibly the more aware you are. Restless minds make you less aware. Moreover, there are all kinds of creatures that don't seem to think at all, like mollusks and so on. Thought is not the issue. He did it. He made it the issue because he was trained scientifically, and he thought it had to be something objective. But science doesn't tell you to go back to the subject. They always speak about being objective. They don't say go back to the subject that does the thinking, does the looking, does the analyzing. Consciousness is the source of it all. There's not much to say about it if you just think of consciousness as such, because it's just there. We are conscious. But we can become more conscious and less conscious. And in this, yogis have specialized how to become more aware, how to increase your consciousness. There's more to it than that. Consciousness is what we just heard in this mantra. Consciousness is bliss. Bliss is what created this body. Bliss is what motivates all our actions. the memory of a lost bliss. Life is the memory of a lost joy. This joy we can attain the more we go back into our source, as opposed to looking outward at the effects, at the reflections of what has been produced here. Now, how did God create the universe? It was like a very good analogy is the surface of a body of water. In order to create ripples, you have to move the water. That's what it says in the Bible too. In Genesis, God moved upon the face of the deep, and he produced these waves. Where there are waves, you have peaks and troughs. And the greater the wave, the greater the trough. People who are fully immersed in the world, they have great ups and great downs, great exhilaration, great depression, great success, great failure. But the more you come back to your own center, your own source, the more those waves begin to subside. Now, here's how the mechanics of it go as far as you and I are concerned, human beings. That duality is absolutely epitomized in the Ira and the Pingala, in the two spinal channels that all of us have. You know, when you open a fish, I don't suppose many of you eat fish anymore, but I know I used to, 55 years ago or whatever it was. And you see those little strings? Those are there along the spine. That's their Ira and Pingala. We all have it. All vertebrates have it. And as the energy comes up, there's an automatic reaction. It's actually the cause, Yogananda said, of the physical breath. And when it goes down, it's the cause of the exhalation. As the energy goes up, you inhale. As the energy goes down, you exhale. Now, with that inhalation, with that upward movement, there's also an objectification of duality. And so, as the energy rises, as you breathe in, you see things and you think, oh, this is great. And when it begins to go downward, you tend to think you want to withdraw from it all, and you think, oh. Now, it's not as if every time you breathe is... That would be ridiculous. And yet you will notice that there is a correlation. There was a funny thing. We saw the Inspector General the other evening on video with Danny Kaye. It's really quite fun. But at a certain point, Danny Kaye represents a real threat to the counselors, who are all a bunch of crooks. And they've given him a glass of wine to drink, which is poisoned. And they didn't actually give it to him. He took it, and they were about to say, no, no, don't. And somebody said, it's poisoned. It's good. Oh, that's right. We'd love to see him kick off. So every time he's doing his usual song and dance, and every time he picks up the glass and just about to drink it, you hear this drum roll, and they rise up expectantly. And then he puts it down and says, oh. So, this is the nature of the world, and you will notice that when you feel great about things emotionally, there tends to be stronger inhalation, less exhalation. When you feel badly about things, there tends to be more a consciousness of sighing. You have to inhale to sigh, obviously, but the emphasis is more on the sighing. It's like when my dad came back from the office in New York one time to Scarsdale. A little girl met him and told him, or tried to tell him, everything that had happened to her that day. I don't think she even knew him, but she just had to tell. And the thing that I remember is that after a while she said, I have to stop now because I have to breathe. Well, we need to understand several things. First of all, our ability to enjoy anything in this world depends upon this inner energy. Another point is that our ability to control this world depends upon this inner energy. The more you're balanced in yourself, the more you find that things just don't go wrong in the same way as they used to. And if they do, it doesn't really matter. What you have inwardly is something that is projected outwardly into the world. In fact, in a very real sense, everything and everyone in this world is a reflection of yourself. I don't mean, and I mentioned this the other day, I don't mean that when you die, the whole world will cease to exist. But nevertheless, you are a part of this dream. And to the effect, to the extent that it affects you, you create your own realities. And you can do so more so if you really have control over the inner self. This is how masters are able to perform their miracles. They aren't really miracles. If you were to go back a few centuries and bring with you a television set, they'd say you're a magician. They wouldn't understand it. Well, personally, I think it is magic because I don't understand it either. I don't know how it works, but we know it does. And masters who are able to use these things, it's not magic. It's not miracles. It's just operating higher law. Now, you see again in this duality, the yin and the yang of human nature, of psychology. The masculine energy is the rising one, aggressive, outgoing, upgoing, whatever. The feminine energy is the inward drawing, the receiving. And both are necessary. Each is important in the balance. With only one, you wouldn't be able to do anything. You need the two. When I wrote this life mantra, it was a very interesting experience because I don't know at all a single chord in that song. I didn't name the chords and I don't know what they are. I don't think that way. But I raised my energy up. I said, I feel to write a song, I felt inspired to, that is a song for the angels, of the angels. And then that was raising it and then receiving it downward. And I heard these things, not literally heard, in my mind. And I knew what the chords were and I found the notes on the keyboard and was able to write them in. But I did the whole thing in a day, which had I been working normally, it would have taken me days to do. But it was something you receive. Now, this is the way to be creative. You want to raise your energy upwards, receive the answers, and then you know what to do. Until you can do it that way, what you do will be mind-born. Most music is mind-born. Most music comes from thinking, well, I want to do this or I like it that way. Don't think that way. Think what wants to manifest itself here. Now, with Kriya, we see that the masters have sent us several basic things. Kriya is the most basic of all. In addition to that, Master was trying his best, wanted to, thundered on the subject, create communities where people could live together, because it's much more difficult. If you're always having to mix with worldly people, it's so much easier if you can mix with devotees. Again, it's so much more sensible than creating huge experiments that almost always human ego and pride and selfishness and so on creep in to the point where it all becomes pretty much the same as it always was, not very different. As the French say, plus ça change, plus c'est la même chose. More things change, the more they remain just as they were. But if you can make it, get a small group of people, and let them come because they want to, and not because they're driven to by some dictator. And let them figure out for themselves how they can live together. You'd be surprised how many lessons we've learned just by being here together. But somebody said one time, you have some wonderful people here. And I said, you know, if you saw one or two, you could say they're wonderful. When you see this many, you have to say that it's what they're doing that's wonderful. It is. When people practice these principles, when they learn by experience and example from others things that work and things that don't work, bit by bit you find a group of people who can set a model for the whole world. And boy, does the world need models now. I think that communities are a very vital part of what Babaji wanted to have and see happen in the world. So Kriya and communities, the next thing was that there are all these divisions of religion, and he wanted people to understand that underlying all religions is one truth. And you can't separate that truth by calling it Hinduism, Christianity, Buddhism, and so on. Those people who think in such sectarian ways are, they're of Kali Yuga. Kali Yuga was that era when people thought of everything as solid. Water no longer a flowing thing, but blocks of ice. And so they would see this definition is the truth, rather than it's a definition of the truth. And so Christianity defined it one way. You can't define it any other way. This is strictly a delusion. The truth is that all people basically want the same things. Jyotish was telling you. Excuse me. Jyotish was telling you yesterday that the underlying desire of all people, it's spiritual. Everything people want is to get away from pain and find happiness. Ultimately, this is that essential, not only consciousness, but essential bliss of every being trying to recapture its source. And you think, oh, well, I'll find it by eating an ice cream cone, or I'll find it by creating a family, or I'll find it by having a beautiful cottage, or in this industry or that industry. These are all reflections of something you want in yourself. Really, the joy that you always feel is inside. You see this beautiful painting. Your heart rises up in joy. It's not the painting that gives you joy. A turtle could look at the painting and wonder if it was good to eat. It's you who give yourself joy because it satisfies some idea in your own mind. The energy rises and you're left with joy. Now, when we can understand that people are all spiritual, but they direct their spirituality in the wrong way, then we can see what Kriya really can do for one. That Kriya takes that energy and turns it inside. Now, there's an interesting contrast and parallel between India and the West, America, perhaps particularly, because it's really the wave of the future. In India, when you read the autobiography, you find that all these people, as soon as Master appeared on the scene in front of some saint or other, they go into the silence. And maybe a couple of hours later, they start talking. Then they go into the silence again. It's rather different here. However, I have read a number of Westerners arrogantly claiming that this is just as good as that. That's not true. It's got to come from that silence in order to become meaningful outwardly also. But the combination of the two is also very good. And this is something that India is learning, and we're learning the other side. So that every day, I don't say meditate 18 hours a day like Ram Gopal Majumdar, for the simple reason that you wouldn't be meditating. You'd be sleeping. Master one time, Mrinalini, came to the breakfast table. He said, "You haven't meditated together." She said, "Sir, I meditated a whole hour." He said, "You should have meditated half an hour." He didn't mean the less you meditate, the better. He meant that he wanted her to meditate with concentration. When you meditate with full concentration, then even, I know he said to Dr. Lewis one time, "Well, you're pretty well set now. Just do one or two kriyas, that's enough." Because with full concentration, you can get that joy just by sipping a little bit by reminding yourself. You can't make absolute rules on these things. Even the number of kriyas that you do depend on several factors. Do you feel comfortable doing a lot? Yes, it's good to get counseling. It's good to say, well, may I do more now? But Bernard asked Master one time, well, what about people who live far away and can't ask? How are they going to stay with their 14 kriyas morning and evening? Master said, don't worry about it. If they're sincere, they'll do more anyway. So I think that we need to understand that excessive obedience is not what's being demanded of anybody. Enthusiasm is what the masters really want from us. And the more enthusiastic we are for what we're doing, the chances are we'll be doing more kriyas. The issue then is don't do too many, because then it can become automatic. Like Marina Lini being told, don't meditate an hour. She was just a girl, 15 or 16, and she was not ready to sit a long time. So she wasn't putting her whole self into it. It wasn't a counsel to others, and he wasn't telling her to lay off because you're not doing it well. He was simply trying to say, be concentrated. He told us to do 108 kriyas morning and evening. That's a good number for those who have been doing it for a while. A bad number for those who are doing it the first time. Excuse me. The important thing is that we do it with real concentration. If we can bring that consciousness inward, then we can discover the secret of divine creativity. I mean, when I bring the energy up and then receive inspiration, that's fine. But it's not quite enough. Much more important is it to bring that energy up in the side and bring it down in the deep spine. When you can do that, every time you exhale, see the essence of meditation, the essence of spiritual progress, is receptivity. You don't have to accomplish anything. You have to receive that which already is and that which you are. And so when you bring it up and bring the energy down, try to feel that you're going deeper and deeper into yourself. In that practice, you'll find that with each kriya, you go finally, first of all, you're in the ira and the pingala. You want to so magnetize those two channels that the energy becomes drawn into the deeper spine, the sushumna. But there's even a deeper spine than that, as is exemplified by the spiritual eye. You go deeper and deeper into this until there is just that sense of union. You don't have to, and this is an odd thing, you don't have to go out and become one with everything. You have to become so centered in yourself that there are no more sheaths to shed, and suddenly you realize you are one with everything. God is both large and small, both infinite and infinitesimal. But the odd paradox is that he's neither large nor small. Space and time are simply delusions. And if you can really get into your own center, it isn't as if suddenly you reach out to everything. You are everything. It's a mystery that can't really be explained deeply, but this much can be understood. The more we can live in our own inner center, the more we know that everything that we do is somehow not necessarily under the control of our will, but all is in harmony with the way we are and the way things should be. I decided to sit down. I don't say everything works out always the way it should, but it's just amazing how often it does. How often just little things somehow fit into place and you don't quite know how or why, but there they are. you're supposed to. Well, I had a fantastic experience one time. It was in India. And there was an Indian friend of mine, Dr. Mishra, who was studying here in Davis and got his degree and actually became known in his field. And he went back to India, and I wanted to, I lost his address. I had been wanting to go visit him, but I didn't know where he lived. I knew he was in Orissa, which is south of Calcutta, and I had to go to Calcutta, and the one regret that I had was that I'm not going to be able to meet him. Well, this is the amazing thing that happened. There were two friends of mine who were supposed to come and meet my plane. They weren't there. Well, what do you do in a foreign airport? Nobody's there to meet you. You don't know the ropes properly. I just thought, well, I just sort of, well, like with Kriya, held up the energy to Divine Mother and said, well, what do you want? I didn't worry. I didn't do what many people would do, which is rush to the nearest phone and sort of empty your pockets trying to find the address to phone and so on. Just calmly said, well, God, what do you want? Do you know that in that moment, somebody passing me from a plane that had just been emptying itself of its passengers stopped in front of me. He said, what is your good name? That's the way they speak in India. What is your good name? And I told him, he said, oh, I thought it must be you. I've seen a photograph of yours, and I've been longing to meet you by a friend of mine, Dr. Mishra, who knew you in America. I thought, Dr. Mishra? Well, I want to meet Dr. Mishra. Where is he? And he said, well, he's in Calcutta. I've come just for the purpose of meeting him. So he took me to Mishra's house. My friends got there too late. I don't know what I'd have done. Turned out that all the hotels were booked, and it all worked out. But that first night I got to spend with Dr. Mishra. How many times have I seen things like that that seem just incredible? But a large part of it is just being centered in yourself, and the divine takes over. The divine helps you and plans your time. You don't have to worry too much, shall I do this or shall I do that? Just let it unfold as it goes. You'll be surprised how much better things go that way. When I write music, I find that's the way to do it. Don't think, oh, I want to do this, or how shall I do that? You tell me, God. If you don't tell me today, okay, you tell me when you want to. But I'm not lackadaisical about it. Very often I will say, I need an inspiration for this, and I want it now. What is it? And as the moment I say that, suddenly I do know. Well, Kriya Yoga is an absolutely magic wand for changing the world. You'd think it would be a strange thing that Babaji would bring a meditation technique to the world. Not many people are going to meditate. Not many people are going to even seek God. And yet a few people who do it somehow change a much larger energy around them. I remember I wanted to look for the home ministry in New Delhi. And I saw three men standing there among the government buildings. Two were Indians and one was an American. I was struck by the way they replied to me. The two Indians just calmly turned and waited to hear what I had to ask. The American, sort of with a good clap hands, here comes Charlie kind of attitude. He'd been sort of jumping up and down trying to charm them. And he turned to me, well, you're on, Jack. What do you have to say? It was so funny to see that contrast. This restless excitement, this calmness. Now, Indians have that developed in them because that is their tradition, even if they don't practice it. Even if they don't come close to living a meditative life. And yet there's something there that they've all sort of picked up on. Well, in these ways, one strong voice one strong group of people, what happens is people see it and they like it. And even if they don't meditate, they sort of try to be like that too. Oh yes, it'll change the world. Communities will change the world. But even if only a handful of people, and Krishna said, out of 1,000, only one seeks me. Out of thousands who seek me, one finds. But we need to understand that practicing Kriya, practicing meditation, seeking God, it's not an either-or proposition if you do it in the right way. Yes, it's either-or in the sense that either your energy goes out toward the ego and the ego's involvement and all the things that you want to do in this world, or you go inward to your source, or you go inward to that inner bliss, and so on. That's either-or. But other than that, to recognize that everything you do outwardly can be reflection and help to remind you inwardly. For instance, that ice cream cone. Instead of picking up this ice cream, excited, how wonderful. Instead of that, yes, it's pleasant. Feel your joy here. You'll find it's much more enjoyable. I mean, the worldly people have to keep convincing themselves, and finally when it gets old hat, they have to convince everybody else that they're having a good time. You just feel joy in yourself and you can enjoy everything. Look at a little child just looking at a clover leaf or a little ant crawling on the clover leaf. It's a different thing altogether. They can look for a long time and enjoy. This enjoyment comes from being more still in yourself. Kriya Yoga can help people to live in this world instead of just everybody rushing off to the caves, not enough caves to go around. You can't have everybody doing that. But what Babaji brought us is a way that we can bring God into the world and bring the world up toward God to transform it. Aurobindo said that the superconscious needs to be brought down to this world. Of course it won't be brought down to this world because it doesn't belong on this realm of existence. But rays of that superconsciousness, yes. The rays of inspiration that come from being in superconsciousness, definitely. The more we have of the inner awareness of ourselves, the more we'll find that everything that we do is done well. And we must understand, and it's a very important aspect of what Master brought us, that our work, we need to work. You don't find God just by deciding not to work. The Bhagavad Gita says no one wins by refraining from activity. You have to act, but in the right way. Master said then, your work helps your meditation, and your meditation helps your work. And of the two, if you need a priority, meditation is more important. And yet again, that must be done with a proper sense of balance. Master wanted me to write articles for the magazine. And I used to spend all my evening meditating and my morning meditating. I'd probably meditate 6 hours a day. Then I'd go off and work in the garden or wherever it was that my unskilled energies were needed. And so I thought, yeah, I'll do it when I can, but this comes first. And he finally, after getting after me several times, I began to worry that maybe I should listen to him. He's my guru, after all. But I said, sir, I'm meditating. And he says, no, give up some of your meditation to do this. Now, would you expect a master to tell you that? Master did. He said, remember, you've got to do both and do them with full energy. He told me when we were talking about my future work for him and so on, he said, your life is one of intense activity and meditation. And so it has been. The name Kriyananda is a very appropriate name for me, because Kriya means action. Unfortunately, I didn't quite mean it that way. When I took the name, I thought just Kriya Yoga. But action was what he wanted and what he's squeezed out of me for. Oh, listen, I'll tell you, I used to... when I was up there lecturing in the Hollywood church, I would think, I've got the bad karma to have to be out here lecturing. All those others can be home meditating. I thought it was just my bad karma. And yet, it took me, I'll tell you the truth, it took me 7 years before I was convinced it did any good at all. That may seem odd to you, but it's the fact. I would look at the clock up there and wonder, 5 minutes, God, you know. The reason I thought that was that Dr. Lewis used to talk about people getting up and just blowing. Well, I didn't want to get up there and just blow. And I wanted to help people. But I didn't see that words were going to do it. But then gradually I discovered that, yes, they can help. Somebody said that after a talk, he had suddenly, after all his life being an atheist, believed in God. I thought, well, that's something. And somebody else said, well, I'd been thinking of committing suicide. And after one of these talks, I just realized there's hope in life. And I thought, well, gee, that's not so bad. Bit by bit, I began to feel confidence in it. I never have been nervous lecturing. It's odd. I don't know why. I think basically because I thought that if I'm a fool, people might as well see it. It doesn't matter. But oddly enough, even when Master put me there, I'd been with him only 8 months, and he had me speak in his behalf in the San Diego church. I was 22 years old, and here this congregation had been waiting months for him to come. I knew the place would be absolutely packed, and it was. People leaning in the windows and standing at the back and completely packed. Well, the way they did it then, I don't know how they do it now, they had curtains that were closed. So the audience had no way to know who was on that stage. They expected Master. The curtains parted. Here this little boy was. But I was not nervous. I was really just thinking, those poor people, how disappointed they must be. So I didn't have time to think about myself.